Welcome back to BCFM's politics show, Metro Mayor Hustings, with me, Tony Gosling. Joining us in the studio are the Green Party's Darren Hall, Labour's Leslie Mansell, Lib Dem's Stephen Williams and the UKIP's Aaron Foote. Unfortunately, both Tim Bowles for the Conservatives and John Savage, who's standing as an independent candidate, couldn't be with us today. Our sister show Dialect is here on BCFM 93.2 at noon every Tuesday. This week, there's an interview with UBS Swiss banking security guard turned whistleblower, Christoph Miley. He discovered piles of documents back in 1997, including funds belonging to Nazi Holocaust victims the bank had kept secret and UBS were preparing to shred. He took them to Jewish organisation, and there were big prosecutions with hundreds of millions of pounds afterwards. Also, Somerset Aviator, one of the few to fly under the old Severn Bridge. Maurice Kirk is back. He made the news again recently when he disappeared in his Piper Cub in an African war zone. That's Dialect at noon next Tuesday. Listen again at bcfmradio.com/dialect, or if you can't wait, you can download it now from dialectradio.co.uk. Now back to the Metro Mayor hustings with our rogues gallery of candidates. That is the Green Party's Darren Hall, Labour's Leslie Mansell, Lib Dem Stephen Williams and UKIP's Aaron Foote. We were talking about transport when we went into the news there. Aaron, I think maybe I'll ask you also sort of continue to talk about this, because there is talk of a congestion charge here in Bristol. I mean, that would benefit probably private firms that administer it, like Capita or IBM, who now administer the London charge. By the way, IBM, I have a particular beef with, because they helped the Gestapo administer the Holocaust in Nazi Germany. IBM did, and they're now running the surveillance system, the congestion charge in London. They're also behind the push for diesel charging, and they manage this London congestion charge for private profit. But without wanting to make too big a thing of it, are we going to see a congestion charge here? Because I do drive around sometimes and think, this is deliberate. What they're doing is they're slowly going to say to us, we're going to have to pay to drive around like the Londoners do.
I would personally not back a congestion charge or a clean air zone. What I'd personally love to do, if elected as Metro Mayor, is campaign national government, is to actually reintroduce a scrappage scheme on dirty polluting diesels, and have it as a scale of escalating scale, so where we have a more polluting diesel being scrapped for either a hybrid or electric car, something that isn't pollutant, as in particulates, we actually have an escalating scale of you get more money for it. That why should we be always using the stick option? We have been carroted towards the fact that we have diesels are more environmentally friendly and more economically friendly for our wallets. So why should we suddenly now change tack and sort of penalise the drivers? It's, at the end of the day, it's only going to hurt the poor. Another tax on the poor. We pay absolutely huge amounts of tax in this country, and we get literally no services for it.
Stephen Williams, Bristol congestion charge, is it looming on the horizon? And what do you make of this scheme to penalise people who use diesels? Because what they're talking about actually is, if you've got a brand new diesel, you've just paid £40,000 for, you won't have to pay anything. But if you've got a bit of an old banger which costs you £500, I mean, this is obviously a regressive tax of some sort.
Yeah, and it's important that people understand the different schemes that you're talking about. I've never supported a crude congestion charge for Bristol in the same way as they have in London. That is basically a road toll for entering a particular geographical area that has nothing to do with what sort of vehicle it is or what emissions it's pumping out. But I am very concerned about air quality both in Bristol and Bath, and do think you need a fiscal incentive to change people's behaviour. So I do say in my manifesto that I want the powers from central government in order to have a license plate recognition system linked to a charging mechanism, so that dirty polluting vehicles, starting with commercial vehicles, so lorries and vans, are deterred from entering central Bristol and central Bath and take the routes around instead. And in time, it'll sort of get them to change the sort of source of their fuel. But I'm not in favour of a crude congestion charge, because that would damage the economy of the city centre. And the most sustainable thing we can have is people living and working and enjoying time in the city centre rather than charging people to come into the city centre. Because if we did that, more people might shop at Cribbs Causeway or go to out-of-town cinemas, and that's environmentally bad.
Oh, what about this whole business, though, of taxing people who can't afford a brand-new diesel, you know, or can't pay £30,000,
£40,000? Well, as I said, Tony, I would only start it with commercial vehicles, and that's where you should start to change behaviour. And I'm sceptical about what Aaron said about scrappage charges. Maybe Darren will have something to say about this as well, because you've got to look at the life cycle of a vehicle, and scrapping a vehicle when it's still perfectly viable as a roadrunner, as it were, just because it's 10 years old or 12 years old, depends how many miles it's done, if it's still perfectly viable to be used as a vehicle for the time for another few years, then again it's environmentally bad to scrap it before it's reached the end of its operational life, because you then have a lot of crushed metal, rubber and glass and whatever, and that isn't good for the environment.
Well, in a few weeks ago I was in Singapore where they pressed the nuclear option button there. Basically you've got to pay £50,000 if you want to put a vehicle on the road because they didn't want to end up like places like Beijing. But anyway, we do have a problem with congestion here in Bristol. Leslie, do you think a congestion charge is the way to go?
Well, I think there's other options we can look at. So for example, I'd like to see flexible working brought in, which may work for some people, might not work for others. But I worked on a project, I headed it up at Bristol Council some years ago. Now, I live 22 odd miles from where I work. I live in Radstock and I work at Southmead Hospital. It can take me 2 hours or more to get to work and to get home.
So is that 4 hours in the car each day?
It can be. So, you know, lots of people that are putting up with these horrendous journeys. It's costing us £350 million a year. So we've got to look at congestion. We need some different ideas. We need some new ideas. And some of them don't necessarily cost. You have to look at flexible working in the broadest possible definition. For example, our nurses wouldn't be able to work at home. That wouldn't be feasible. But for more of the admin staff, it may be possible. And what it needs is good management to make that effective. So it's just one way that we could do something a bit different. And also what we are going to see, and we're hearing more and more of this now, as batteries become better developed, then there's an opportunity to have electric cars. So they should hopefully be less polluting one way or another.
But they're not going to stop the congestion, are they?
No, well they won't. But the thing is, like I say, unless we start looking at some other options. If you look at, you know, the buses were deregulated by Margaret Thatcher and the Conservative government, and what happened? We lost a lot of our services out in the rural areas. For lots of people, they can't get anywhere. For Freedom Youth, just to give a concrete example, where buses were being cut out to the rural areas, for young people coming into Bristol for services, then it was very difficult for them to get home, and they may not wish to ask parents to take them, especially when it's not an organisation that's supporting them because of their sexual orientation, which they can't discuss at home.
Anyway, Darren, Bristol congestion charge will benefit private firms like Capita or IBM. It's a slightly unbiased the question because I'm not sure that the congestion is genuine. It doesn't look to me as if the real efforts have been made through something like a tram rather than metro bus to actually address this. But anyhow, what do you make of this, and is it something that you would approve if you were doing this job?
Well, the first point is to be clear about that we want a clean air zone. That's the priority. And actually the air quality issues are in quite a small area. So having some punitive congestion charge over some, you know, boundary around the city centre isn't what I'm talking about. I don't think it's what other people are talking about either. Yeah. What we've been saying on the campaign is that we're all pretty much in agreement about the need to tackle air quality. And see, there's an alarm telling us that we need to do it.
The quality of the air in this studio is not good enough. Yeah, Open the window.
So, Stephen's right. We absolutely need to tackle the biggest polluters first. The other thing, so large diesels, the buses need to be dealt with. And
so that'll mean bus fares go up, won't it?
No. Because it's part of the system where we shift over to a cleaner, greener, integrated transport system. So bus fares don't need to go up, part of the rolling change of the vehicles that are used in the city centre. The other thing to point out is that as urban living changes, fewer people are going to buy cars. They're going to share them. Almost certainly going to share access to, firstly, renewably powered vehicles, and secondly, vehicles that are driverless. So we are on the verge of a transport revolution. The start of this for Bristol and Bath is a clean air zone, also called a living heart. I really like that idea for Bristol and Bath, to have this living heart idea.
Okay, let's have another little round here, because I think we've brought up some other questions. Do you think that, Stephen, do you think the Williams, Lib Dem, do you think the oil industry will allow us to get rid of our cars? They seem to quite like the way that they make lots of profits every time we drive around.
Well, we live in a democracy, believe it or not, and you're very cynical, Tony. And actually, the person who's elected to this position will decide what's going to happen, whether a clean air zone with bite, which is what Darren and I are talking about, will be achieved or not. I don't think BP or ExxonMobil are going to tell me what to do. Donald Trump may welcome them into their administration, but they're not going to be part of our administration.
Leslie.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because one business making one set of profits is not going to want to give that up very easily. Having said that, the Metro Mayor will have an opportunity to draw more funding into the area, as I said before, for things like an arena or whatever else is agreed. Because at the end of the day, the three local authorities will be deciding what they want. The Metro Mayor doesn't have omnipotent rule in this particular case. But if we look at things like congestion charging, in Nottingham, what they've done, rather than a congestion charge, they brought in a car parking charge for people working in the city. They paid for their tram with that. And I think if that was fair and reasonable, people wouldn't mind as much. And also in this area, I think there's about £200 million, I'm not quite sure of the figure, that's been brought in for the west of England to bring in walking and cycling. So lots of businesses, and I know our hospital signs up to that as well. So we can look at the type of things we can do, the sorts of initiatives to bring about some change, and it can be a small step at a time to get to somewhere bigger later
on. Okay, well, I mean, we're talking about transport, we ought to talk about some of the things which really do affect people quite a lot. One of those is potholes, because the quality of our roads is
don't get me started on potholes.
Absolutely,
please don't get me started on potholes.
Because
it's the responsibility of the Metro Mayor.
I mean, there are part of your responsibility is transport. I'd just like to hear, I mean, What would you, Darren? Is there anything that you think can be done? Because the quality of our roads is absolutely appalling. Having been to several other parts of the world recently, including Europe, we have great big holes in our roads and no one seems to care.
Yeah, well, ironically, of course, by banning large diesel vehicles from the city centre, that will help, because a lot of the damage is being done by repeated tracking across by large vehicles. The other issue...
Yeah, they don't pay their fair share of tax either, do they, the big vehicles?
No, yeah. And I mean, there's a small opportunity here to bring climate change into the debate, because the worse the weather, the more temperature changes and the heavier rainfall is going to mean that we need to spend more on roads. Now, unfortunately, one of the impacts of government cuts is repairing the roads, and that is a direct result of government cuts, where the budget is discretionary and local authorities are having to use that money on other things, and they are delaying and delaying until we all start screaming about it and saying something's got to be done.
Well, I wonder whether people buy these big SUVs and 4x4s because they're fed up with the potholes. Leslie, what do you make them? Since this is your pet subject,
I can't speak the way other people buy a particular vehicle. But one of the issues is that the infrastructure, and the Metro Mayor will have responsibility for infrastructure. If we're going to have more people cycling, we've got to have the surfaces that they can cycle on that are safe. I actually saw a woman come off a bike going down Park Street the other day, and she'd hit a pothole. You couldn't see what had gone on for a start. She was cycling down the road quite happily, and all of a sudden she was on the floor. And my campaign manager, Tim, he's given up cycling at night because he said it's just too dangerous because of all the potholes. You know, we've got to sort something out. We can't have one thing out and not another. We've got to look at these things holistically, and we've got to look at these things together to take things forward and do them in a different way.
Aaron, what do you make of the pothole? It's probably more a rural problem, possibly, than it is an urban one.
I don't think it's just necessarily a rural. It's an issue across the whole board. And in fact, potholes are there, and it is what we've got to look at. But it's not part of the remit of the Metro Mayor, unfortunately. But going forward, I would like to actually see a transit system that is linked all up, so we don't have these bus lanes or cycle lanes that suddenly appear and end. We've got to have a cycle lane that carries on, and where it is actually properly maintained and kept up together, because we need to get people on bikes and walking. It is part of what we have to have. We have to have a coherent and netted transit system, and we can only do that by actually having correct road surfaces.
Now, Stephen's turn now. Is this something that keeps you awake at night, pothole, Stephen?
I wouldn't say it keeps me awake at night, but obviously it's frustrating. I'm not a frequent cyclist, if you want to put it that way, but do drive around, and I have a small car, so potholes are infuriating. But I do think sometimes local authorities need to spend their highways budget more wisely. Just to give you an example, it infuriates thousands of people who live in St Andrews, Bishopston and Redland. Some utterly pointless so-called traffic calming measures were put in at the junction of Cromwell Road and North Road in St Andrews. Narrowing the junction so that people turning out of Cheltenham Road who want to go up Cromwell Road now have to wait a long time, quite unnecessarily, causing congestion, causing air pollution, supposedly to make the route safer for cyclists, but they put it on the wrong side of the road, so the cyclists are coming on the wrong side of the road up a one-way street.
Well, you've reminded me.
Whoever designed that, frankly, needs something painful, Stephen, to be done to their career.
They've wasted
a lot of money. I just to finish the point. The reason I thought of potholes, so that's my route home normally if I'm coming from the city centre, is that North Road and Cromwell Road have a lot of potholes on them, and if they just addressed that, they would have made far more people much happier, including cyclists.
Well, you've reminded me of what I call the bonkers bus stops, when they started moving all these bus stops right out into the middle of the road. So I really feel for poor cyclists who have to go into oncoming traffic just to get past a bus. I'm sure there was some kind of logic behind but it's bad for cyclists. Anyway, Leslie, you wanted to come back in.
Just quickly, one thing that the Metro Mayor will be doing is coordinating between the three local authorities, and in fact with North Somerset as well on certain things. But there was, I'm not sure which way round this was now, there was green cycle lanes and red cycle lanes. Some were in Bristol and some were in South Gloss, but they didn't join up. So if you got on a cycle in Bristol and went through to South Gloss, and all of a sudden the whole thing disappeared. It just wasn't joined up. Now, surely, you know, instead of joining up roadworks like we usually do, why didn't we just join up the cycle lanes? It was such an easy thing to do, and it's one thing that the Metro Mayor can get involved in and trying to get some better and more efficient ways of getting around.
Well, surely the cyclists can just cycle across some farmland until they reach the other cycle lane.
Have you ever tried it on a bike on a rutted field, on a ploughed field?
Well, at least we don't do here what they do in Russia, which is when they get a traffic jam on the run on the motorway, they will just drive off the side of the motorway and across the farmland until they find they've gone past the traffic jam, and they get back on the motorway again that way.
You struggle with that in a Robin Reliant.
You certainly would. Anyway, another part of the responsibility of the Metro Mayor is going to be boosting employment and economic growth. So I'd like to start with you this time, Stephen Williams from Lib Dems. How will you boost employment and economic growth? It's one thing we desperately need in this country. Up until the late 1970s, we had pretty much full employment. Everyone found it easy to get a job. If they didn't like their boss, or if their boss bullied them or messed them around, they could just leave and find another one straight away. Why can't we do that anymore, and what are you going to do to sort it out?
Well, employment law certainly isn't going to be in the remit of the Metro Mayor, but local economic development certainly is, and in fact that's the primary reason why these posts have been created. And I'm glad that at 21 minutes past six we've started discussing why this position has been created. The good news is that we have a very prosperous region. We're the most prosperous region outside London, so we start from a good position. But the downside of that is that the prosperity is not evenly shared, either socially or geographically. I mean, Leslie's mentioned she comes from Radstock, so the towns and villages south of the region do not share fairly in that prosperity. More needs to be done to make sure that inward investment comes into some of our communities and into our inner city deprived areas as well, such as St Paul's and the area where we're broadcasting from here in Lawrence Hill or in Twerton and other parts of Bath. So I want to rebalance the economy using the money and powers that are available that you've mentioned, the £30 million a year local economic development fund, but also the soft power of the Metro Mayor to get employers around the table to solve some of the intractable problems of some communities having endemic worklessness through several generations, and opening up opportunities to those people. And the final thing that the Metro Mayor will certainly be able to do, and this is very important, my fellow candidates can now all shout bingo, is that Brexit is going to make this a lot harder. So as regional mayor, I would want to have a Brexit plan to make sure that we prepare for the worst, because I do think it's going to be the worst that happens if we go down Theresa May's hard Brexit route, to plan for the skills gaps that we're going to have, what retraining opportunities we're going to have to do locally if our hospitality industry and our aerospace industries are going to survive, and to lead the trade delegations are going to be even more vital to make sure we get more inward investment into the region.
Okay, Stephen. Darren, what do you make of this responsibility, boosting employment and economic growth? How are you going to do that?
Well, it is unfortunate, I think, that this devolution agenda has been so singularly focused on economic growth, because I believe that prosperity, A, is a better word to describe what we want to achieve, and I say that because, B, there is more to life than GDP. We know this in the west of England. It's about quality of life. Now, there are two issues about that. One is that not everybody is able to enjoy a good quality of life. So that's absolutely one of the criteria. We've got to focus first and foremost on helping people back into work and helping people who are in work that is at risk of being taken away from them, zero hours contracts, those kind of things. And I would like to see our region become a beacon for a real living wage. So that's one issue. Secondly, I think there is a real opportunity for businesses to get more involved in helping to skill up young people and older people who are struggling to survive in this economy. Now, part of the devolution agenda allows us to have a conversation with business that says, what are you going to do to directly help those people that you want to get into the workforce? And I think that's a massive opportunity for the west of England to buck the trend around what is the focus for the government's agenda and say, over the next 20 to 30 years, what do we want the future of our economy to look like? We want it to be more equal and we want it to be more diverse and resilient.
So that's Darren Hall for the Greens. Leslie Mansell for the Labour Party. How are you going to do this? Boosting economic growth and employment. I mean, this is something that those of us who are old enough can remember when it was actually fairly easy to just get a job, and that job would pay the rent, pay the electricity bills, etc. And nowadays, that seems like a forgotten dream.
Yes, there's been a huge turnaround, hasn't there? We've now got people on 0 hours contracts, we've now got people on minimum wage, and what I want to see, it's in my manifesto, I want to see a West of England living wage, and that needs to tie up then with housing, so we've got a living rent, so people can afford to pay for where they're living. If you look at some recent figures that have come out, growth, and I know Darren just said GDP shouldn't get focused on it, but growth is 0.3%. If the economy is going to survive, and if we're going to get things out of that economy, it's got to grow at around 3%, so we're nowhere near getting there. And at the same time, we've got a culture of absolute inept waste by the Conservative government, who, as I said earlier on, £500 million on homelessness, and yet Tony just said it would cost £44 million alone just to sort out homelessness and support people. There's a gap there. We could do some things better. We could do things differently. What I want to see also is that we make sure that people have got the right jobs for them, and that we ensure that they go up that skills ladder, because what we do is we tend not to do that, and what happens is then that we're missing out on the skills and the talents that people have. So it's not just black and minority ethnic people in this region that are losing out, women are losing out. We've got the biggest pay gap despite the Equal Pay Act of 1970. We still have a massive pay gap between women and men, and that's not just full-time work, that's part-time work as well.
Okay.
So again, it's not a single approach, it's a multitude of things we need to do to sort this out.
Well, one thing that occurs to me, you're talking about women's employment rates and not getting paid the rate for the job, is that back in the 1970s you only had to have one member of the household going out. Nowadays, often you need to have two people going out to work, both husband and wife or whatever. Anyway, Aaron, what do you make of this? I mean, this is a knotty one, isn't it? Boosting employment and economic growth.
Obviously, I agree with Darren quite on this one. We're being measured on GDP. I think it'd be quite nice to be measured on happiness, to be honest. And I think that'd be quite a way forward and a change for us. But obviously, we've got to look at the Metro Mayor devolution pack. It's been designed around GDP and growth. We've got to work with businesses and local people. And I want to work with local people through an e-democracy platform to find out what skills and what they want to achieve from this. We've got to work with employers as well and find out how we can get more apprenticeships. It's key. Let's train people. By training people, we will actually get more GDP, we will get more output, and we'll make people eventually in the long run happier and more coherent societies.
Well, I mean, it may be a bit unfair to single you out, Aaron, but yes. I noticed this week that the UK Independence Party has decided to make some, I think, some sort of decision about whether the people should be allowed to wear burqas and this yep. kind of thing. I mean, it does seem as if you're singling out one minority community.
I'm quite happy to comment on this one quite easily, to be honest. I'm along the same lines as Bill Etheridge and Jim Carver, to be quite honest. I don't agree with this draconian rule that's coming from our party, and I'm quite happy to stand up to this one. And unfortunately for us in UKIP, we don't have whips, so we don't have to listen to party politics all the time. And I will not be listening to the burqa ban.
Okay, thanks. Also, I think we've got another subject area that the Metro Mayor is going to be responsible for is adult education. I mean, I wasn't really aware that there was that much adult education going on. Certainly, you know, that seems to be something that's been run down over the last 30, 40 years. But maybe we'll start with you again, Aaron. Yeah. Adult education, we certainly do. People do need to change horses in midstream sometimes, change careers. It's not just about what you learn at school anymore or at university. So what will you be doing to make sure that the adult education opportunities are there?
I think we can look at what's happened. It's not a job for life anymore. We don't go out into the workplace now and to be a farmer is still probably normally a job for life, but to be like a coal person or to be a shop assistant or to be actually in higher education, it's not the job for life anymore. We change and we adapt to our current needs, so we've got to model our education system around that with higher education. We've got to work with the people of the West of England here, and this is why I think e-democracy is key, because we will find out what people want and need, and they can decide how the taxes are spent on that.
Darren, what do you make of this part of your responsibility? Are you actually going to be able to make sure that people can get new education, increase their education, get retrained if they want to?
Yes, I think we can make a real difference in this area, actually. And we had a very useful meeting this morning with the principals, chief executives of the various colleges around the region. And they were pointing out, quite rightly, that there is a small budget which is going to be directly administered through the Metro Mayor process. But there's a much bigger pot that needs to be looked at in order to create a... they were creating £170 million worth of process around adult education. What emerged from that for me was the relationship between the education process and the businesses that are looking for people to be employed in their business. And there was an acceptance by all of those people around the room, including Business West, who were there to represent regional business, in saying they have a role to play in filling the gap that has emerged from the lack of government funding, because they've got a really good incentive to help train young people and to retrain people who are looking for a change in career, to not only fill the skills gap they've got at the moment, but also the likely skills gap that is going to appear because of Brexit.
Now, Leslie, another question here is, will people be able to afford to get retrained? I mean, because most of the education we're being offered now, certainly outside of secondary schools, beyond that, everyone is having to pay for it.
Well, this is a really complex question, isn't it? I mean, what I find in the hospital, we have a real struggle with basic skills training. So we struggle to recruit healthcare assistants because they can't get past their level one maths and English. What we also find we've got a gap in is maths teachers. Now, it doesn't take a lot to add two and two together on that one. But the issue is there. How are we going to bring all this together so that we can make sure that we've got the best access for most people? And part of the devolution deal is about ensuring that people are the furthest from the job market, including disabled people, have got more access. What we're seeing is cuts to things like advice centres, who provide support to people who struggle to fill in a job application because they can't read and write. We haven't got that basic skills in place, and we're losing the advice centres, and the colleges are not doing, because that money was cut from the budget again by the Conservatives, then, you know, our hands are tied all the time. Certainly the meeting we had this morning with the college principals was really interesting, and I think there's a lot that the Metro Mayor can do there. It's not built in naturally, the skills agenda, and there's certainly things in my manifesto, and certainly something that I want to make a priority along with all the others.
Stephen Williams, what do you make of this? Will you be able to actually get adult education up and running again? It doesn't seem like there's that much around these days.
Well, it's another opportunity to influence locally what is currently decided nationally. So I think that is a step forward we should not lose sight of over all of these policy areas. But it's not a responsibility that's devolved until May 2018. So what I've said in my manifesto, which I would like people to read online on my website, stephenwilliams.org.uk, and they'll find a full section there on the economy, transport, housing, skills, Brexit, and my approach to devolution.
And you'll find links to Stephen's website and the others' websites on thisweek.org, since we're doing websites, thisweek.org.uk. I'll make sure they're all on there, Stephen.
Great, good. And in the skills section, I've said I would spend time in the first year as being the regional mayor before these responsibilities are transferred, meeting with all the colleges, and three of us had a start with that this morning, and all the private sector skills providers as well. But critically, employers, particularly in the sort of growth areas of the future, what I hope will be the growth areas of the future, depending on how much damage Brexit does, to make sure that the skills that are on offer to adults are aligned with what the opportunity are going to be over the next 5 or 10 years, so that we get that proper pathway into work as a result of spending what is, yes, a scarce resource.
Well, as in case you hadn't noticed, there's been also a general election called a couple of weeks ago. Theresa May has a majority, so why has she called it now? Is it a second Brexit vote? And will we be seeing Bristol's first Green MP in Bristol West? There are some people that think we may. We'll have a discussion about that with our Metro Mayor guests in a minute. But first, we've got a clip from Prime Minister's Questions, the last one before the general election in June, with Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn talking about education and austerity.
Mr. Speaker, when I became Leader of the Opposition 18 months ago, I said I wanted people's voices to be heard in Parliament. So, Mr. Speaker, instead of just speaking to hand-picked audiences who can't ask questions, I hope the Prime Minister won't mind if she answers some questions today from the public.
Give it a try.
I start, Mr. Speaker, with Christopher, who wrote to me this week, and he says, in the last 5 years, my husband has had only a 1% increase in his wages. The cost of living has risen each year. We now have at least 15% less buying power than them. So where is Christopher and his husband's share in the stronger economy?
Yep.
Minister!
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can I first of all join the Right Honourable Gentleman in commending those colleagues who are leaving the House for the service that they have shown to their constituents and to Parliament over the years. Can I also say a huge thank you to the staff of the House of Commons and of Parliament who support us in the work that we do here in this chamber and elsewhere. I will come on to the point about, I note by the way that the Right Honourable Gentleman didn't take the opportunity to stand up and show how he would actually stand up for the defence of our country. Once again, he missed that opportunity. I note what the Right Honourable Gentleman is saying about wages increasing. I see today that he is talking about paying for extra wage increases in the National Health Service. I think we should first of all recognise, actually, that for people working in the National Health Service, around half of those staff, because of progression and basic pay increases, will actually see on average a pay increase of 4% in their time. What we know, and what I can say to Christopher is that he will have a choice at the next election, a choice between the strong and stable leadership of the Conservatives, which will secure our economy for the future, and a Labour Party which would crash our economy, which would mean less money for public services, and would, the ordinary working families would pay the price.
I think I should ask you to start there, Leslie, since that was aimed, that reply from Theresa May, directly at you, and the Labour Party apparently is going to crash the economy.
Well, what nonsense. I mean, this is what the Conservatives have been doing all the time they've been in office. I mean, the Labour Party didn't crash the economy before. It's a myth to say that they did. It actually grew the economy and reduced the national debt, whereas with the Conservatives, we've had absolutely the opposite. At the moment, we've now got personal debt standing at almost £2 trillion. Do you know, I've got no idea the size of that. I've got no idea what a trillion looks like. But what's happening is wages are absolutely stagnating. People are probably not earning any more now than they were in 2008, unless they're the chief executive of a company, in which case by the 4th of January they will have earned more than most people earn all year. So it's an absolute nonsense. What we're living in at the moment is a casino economy where money is being sucked out into tax havens rather than going into public services. And with regard to the NHS, I started working the NHS in 2009. I didn't have a pay rise for 4 years. When we got that pay rise, it was 1% and it wasn't consolidated. So what that means is that we didn't get any pension added to that. And I'm not the only person that works in the health service. It's the biggest employer in the country. So if we're not paying people an appropriate wage, how on earth are they managing, especially if they're only on a minimum wage, when they're possibly, if they're working full-time, they're possibly earning around £14,000-£15,000 a year.
Leslie, what about the other questions, though? Why has May called this election now, and is it a second Brexit vote?
Well, I think there's lots of reasons it's being called. One of the reasons is because a number of Conservative MPs are about to be taken to court regarding their election expenses, which is a serious
offence. So do you have inside information from the Crown Prosecution Service that they are going to be charged?
Well, what I'm saying is that was what was happening. I don't have inside information, clearly I don't. But it looked like the government were going to lose its majority, which is only... it's only very small.
About 17, so, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, so they were going to lose 36 MPs. I do think it's an issue about Brexit because Theresa May went to Europe and demanded several things, including a trade deal, and the 27 countries in the EU said go away in no uncertain terms because they weren't going to be bullied. If I'm a trade union rep, I have been for 30 odd years, you don't go in and demand and thump the table. That's not the way you get anything out of anybody.
Okay.
You need to go in and negotiate. So yes, it's about Brexit, yes, it's about what those MPs did, and yes, it's about the company screwing up the economy.
Stephen Williams, do you think it's about a second Brexit referendum, and why has Theresa May called this general election?
I think there should be another opportunity for the people to give their verdict on Brexit. Let me finish my sentence. But the right time to give that is not May 2017, when Theresa May is just embarking on her tortuous negotiations with the European Union. It should be at the end of it, when we know what Brexit looks like, because at the moment we don't. We've got a clue from her Lancaster House speech, and it looks pretty awful. It looks like it's going to be an extreme Brexit that's catapulted out of the single market, out of the customs union, with lesser status than Norway and Turkey, for goodness sake. And I don't think a lot of people who voted Leave thought that's what they were going to be getting. But the right time for the British people to make a judgment of that, either in a general election or in a standalone referendum, would have been in early 2019 when we get to that point. The reason I think she's called it now is not for that. It's because the Labour Party, frankly, is going to get screwed. Jeremy Corbyn is probably the most disastrous Labour leader of my lifetime, and I got interested in politics when Michael Foot was leader of the Labour Party. I come from a Welsh mining community just along from where he was the MP, in fact. And the reason I didn't join the Labour Party at that time, which a lot of people assumed I should have done, was because the Labour Party was a mess. It was a left-wing, total nonsense, the lost touch with ordinary working people. Jeremy Corbyn has taken it even further to the left, supported by people like Leslie Mansell sitting next to me at the moment. That's why Theresa May has seen naked opportunity here to crush the Labour Party, have a huge Tory victory, and that's the awful prospect that awaits us on June the 8th. And that's why it's important the Lib Dems gain a lot of the seats that we lost to the Conservatives, particularly here in the West Country.
Leslie, before we hear from UKIP and from the Greens, it looks like you wanted to come back there.
Well, actually, what a load of nonsense that we've just heard. Jeremy Corbyn is actually being well supported on the doorstep, and I've been on the doorstep now since last January. So while there are some people that have been sucked in by the media hype, lots of people understand that Jeremy Corbyn put forward 10 pledges. Those 10 pledges adopted by the Labour Party are around having secure homes, having secure jobs, having public services, having justice and equality, and they all sign up to that. In fact, most people do, and I think the Tories are going to be in for a big shock come the 9th of June.
Aaron Foote, as UKIP candidate, yeah. What do you make of this general election being called? Because Theresa May does have her majority. Do you see it as a second Brexit vote?
No, I see it as a diluted Brexit vote, to be honest. I think she's being smart moved here. She's promised not to call a snap election. She now has, so she's reversing on her promises, which I think she's just going to carry on by diluting the true Brexiteers in her party. She's going to have a big mandate. We're not going to lie about this. She's going to have an absolute massive majority. She can then ignore the true Brexiteers like Boris Johnson, Michael Gove, and our local North Somerset MP. She can ignore them. She won't need their votes. So it's going to be about diluting Brexit, and it's probably going to be about reversing Brexit, to be honest.
Darren Hall from the Greens, what do you make? Why has Theresa May called this? She already got her majority.
I think there's no doubt in my mind that there is a significant section of the Conservative parties who are arrogant. They are autocratic. They're egotistical, and they couldn't resist what they saw as an opportunity to push their luck. And I really hope that there is a resurgence of people, Remainers, who come back out and say, do you know what, this is not what we voted for. We certainly didn't vote for extreme Brexit. I think
you're saying that she's looking at the polls being so positive towards the Conservatives that's why she's called it, do you think? Because we've seen, haven't we, with both Brexit and other elections, that polls aren't always reliable. And the Trump election, obviously.
No, and that's why I really hope that they're going to get a shock. And I, you know, the Green Party support Lib Dems in their pursuit of making sure there is an opportunity for a democratic vote on the result of the deal. That's actually when the referendum should have been. Now, it's the because people were lied to consistently through this process. They were duped by this process. They were unable to make a reasonable decision. And all that talk of saying the vast majority, that was absolute rubbish, where this margin has been turned into a landslide for something we didn't even know what we were voting for.
Now, when it comes to the general election, are you in favour of electoral pacts in order to maybe stand aside in one constituency or another?
I am very clear on supporting Progressive Alliance. I think it's absolutely essential, one, to make sure that we get rid of this Tory government, and secondly, that we move towards a PR voting process for the UK. We have to get rid of first past the post, because we're never going to get a better kind of politics in the UK unless we tackle the establishment and the lobbying and the big business, all that stuff that is so bad about our democratic processes.
Can I say I agree with Darren. I don't want to see a majority Tory government on June the 8th, let alone one with a landslide victory. And I do wish parties on the centre and left, over many decades, in fact, had got themselves sorted out on this and agreed on electoral reform was ultimately in their interest. It's the Labour Party that really needs to make the big move
on this,
not the Liberal Democrats
or
the Green Party. Well, there's no prospect of a coalition, because it's quite clear that Theresa May and the Conservatives are going to win by a substantial majority. There's no coalition on offer at all. I must say, though, to Darren, well, he and I personally agree, and we've discussed this, and I've discussed this with other friends in the Green Party, this ought to be the way that we go. thus far in the general election. You know, it's not too late. Nominations haven't even opened, let alone closed yet. The only party that said it will stand down anyway is the Liberal Democrats, and we've said it in Brighton that we will stand down in favour of Caroline Lucas. We have made the first move. I'm very disappointed to have read on social media, so it may not be accurate, while we've been sitting here, that the response of the Green Party in Sussex is to say they're going to fight every seat, including Lewes, which is right next door to Brighton, where the Liberal Democrats very narrowly lost to the Conservatives last time. That's not a good start, frankly.
Leslie, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, I think we're in a position where we cannot trust the Tories anymore with our economy. I talked earlier on about where the money's going. If you look at something like personal independent payments, that budget is overspent. We spent £700 million giving it to two companies that haven't managed to do the job yet. In the meantime, people are suffering. We're seeing people commit suicide. So I don't agree at all that Labour is on the back foot. I think Labour is on the front foot. And I think Stephen Williams' assertion, I mean, he keeps making these betting predictions and, you know, I'm not too sure he's always going to be right on them. So as far as I'm concerned, the Metro Mayor election is absolutely crucial next week. Please put your vote against Labour. And then the general election, please do the same. Because if not, you're going to be voting for more austerity, less services. And if you go the other way, then please, please pick prosperity. That's the way we need to go.
Finally, with you, Aaron, it's worth mentioning that I don't think UKIP has any MPs now. I mean, is this really the end of the party? Because it
definitely
does look
not
as if the whole Brexit thing has been voted for, and that's goodbye to UKIP.
No, definitely not. I think you'll find in the general election that we will probably pick up one or two seats that we will be targeting. That we will have a target in list, and we will actually stick to it this time. Where we went wrong last time in the general election, I'll quite happily hold my hand up, as we had our expectations too high. We targeted too many seats, and we didn't do what the Lib Dems did, and that is be absolutely fantastic and super hyper local. So we have to start doing that, and we have done that. We have championed change where we have got these council seats, where we have actually making change now by holding councils and holding people to account.
Also, on the whole thing of polls and elections, this isn't really anything to do with the Metro Mayor whatsoever, but I wonder, starting with you, Darren, do you have any views on President Trump and British foreign policy?
Yeah, I certainly do have some views on I even struggle to I don't want to disrespect the role of president, but I do struggle to put the word in front of his name, to be honest. I think this was a triumph of the worst kind of politics, you know, the social media, the far right rhetoric. It was a dreadful moment. I'm really glad to see that Europe is, it looks like it's going to stand firm against this kind of stuff. We have to, because the world all of a sudden, like almost overnight, feels like a more dangerous place. Because of the kind of language and the kind of attitude that Trump brings to global politics. And we're all, you know, the first 100 days has just seen a plethora of mistakes and broken promises and, dare I say it, you know, Islamophobia for sure. So I'm utterly horrified, heartbroken, terrified on occasion, and I hope we can, as quickly as possible, get back to a global society that understands that hope is better than fear, peacekeeping is more important than warmongering, etc., etc.
Aaron Foote, yes. Do you have any views on President Trump and British foreign policy?
Yeah, I quite happily answer this question, because originally I did support him because I thought he was going to stop the sort of police in the world policy that Obama and the other politicians.
Well, he did say he would, didn't he? He wouldn't do any more foreign interventions.
Yeah, and he's
and
failed
suddenly
on that.
North Korea happened.
Yeah, now he's
and
failed
Syria.
On that, and he's personally he's gone absolutely right down to the bottom of my list, and yeah, I don't support him one bit no more.
Stephen Williams.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder if Nigel Farage will be endorsing you, Aaron, in future elections, because he quite obviously feels rather differently. I agree with everything Darren said. I think Trump is a total disaster.
But the American people did vote for him.
No, well, they didn't. Hillary Clinton got the most votes. Let's not forget that. And it was significant as well.
But you see, you know, we have a first-past-the-post system here, don't we? Which you have to manoeuvre, and there has to be tactical voting. Mm. And so, obviously, a party, someone that's going to win, has got to understand the system and play the system. It's not fair.
But let's not lose sight of the fact that Hillary Clinton got, I think, at least 3 million more votes than Donald Trump. So let's not assume that the American people made a collective mad decision. They didn't, but the Electoral College frustrated that result in the same way as our first-past-the-post system frustrates what the British people vote for in election after election. But if ever the metaphor bull in a china shop was appropriate, I mean, it's appropriate here, and the china shop is world order. And that's what really ought to worry all of us, as Trump sort of flounders about and blunders into different situations, can't be sure one minute whether he's in favour of NATO or against NATO, which general he's listening to, whether he thinks Kim Jong-un is actually a good bloke trying to sort out a difficult situation, or whether he's a dangerous despot. It seems to move on a daily basis, and that is frightening. I'm making light of it, but it is frankly frightening. This man is the most important human being on the planet. I don't think he's particularly well equipped to do the job.
Leslie Mansell for Labour, what do you make of Donald Trump, and what thoughts have you got on British foreign policy?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Donald Trump made lots and lots of claims which seem to have come off the hoof rather from any kind of evidence, similar to what we've had with the Brexit argument. Apparently he's just backed down on the wall, so there's no longer going to be a wall. As Metro Mayor, I want to see a wall around the west of England, because I think we need to stop our talent getting out. So that is a joke.
Stop the underground M32 again.
I think the other issue is that for Donald Trump, I mean, make no mistake, he's been first into Europe trying to negotiate a trade deal. And that's one of the things that Theresa May went in and demanded and got told to go away, because that's not the way they work. So Donald Trump is there, unfortunately. He appealed to the poorest voters, those that were without jobs, those that were struggling. And I think that's a section of the population. It's quite understandable when they say, hey, we want things differently. But we don't get things differently, do we? We have the Tories coming time and time again, try and convince us through their cultural hegemony that what we need is something. We need them, when in actual fact we don't. And let's face it, this austerity is not working. Even the CBI was saying austerity is not working. And let's face it, Liberal Democrats, when they were in coalition, they were supporting those austerity measures. We've got to stop. We've got to do something different.
Final question, really quick, if you can manage to answer in half a minute, that would be helpful. Starting with you, Aaron Foote. Yep. For UKIP, what are the best and worst things about Bristol City Region?
Oh, the best is obviously we've got amazing talent and amazing location. I think the worst thing is the potholes and transport system.
Okay, Darren.
The best thing is the potential economics for everyone, and the proximity to the beach. I came back here because I can get to the beach to go surfing within 2 hours.
Which beach?
North Devon.
Oh, okay, not Western Supermud.
No, but and the worst thing about it is its inequality.
Leslie Mansell, best and worst things about the region.
I think the best thing within the region is the diversity, and also it's such a beautiful part of the world to live in. And the worst thing really is the congestion.
Okay, well, Stephen Williams, what do you make of those two questions about our region?
I think the best thing is that the two cities of Bath and Bristol are fantastic places that people from all over the world have heard of for different reasons, and as regional mayor I would want to bring them together and market them jointly, because I think we've got a world beating brand in terms of what they can offer as a World Heritage City, and for Bristol, a quirky, diverse city that does things differently. I think that's something fantastic. But what despairs me about Bristol in particular, I agree with my colleagues about inequality, but frankly the public transport is woeful and lets us down, and that's the big challenge for whoever is elected to this post.
Time to sign off now for the Murdoch News at 7. Coming up live on Facebook, Arabian Nights with Mohammed Makawi. Thanks to our guests, the Green Party, Darren Hall, Labour's Leslie Mansell, Lib Dem, Stephen Williams and UKIP's Aaron Foote. Apology from the Conservative Tim Bowles, who's looking after his minister today, and the independent candidate John Savage, whose job as chairman of United Hospitals Bristol's NHS Trust called him away. And thanks to studio engineer Sadeev Satan. Where will you be on Sunday night, Steve? Beltane it is, isn't it? Will you be down in Glastonbury? Up on the Brocken? No? Okay. This show's story links and comment page is one word, thisweek.org.uk. Download our MP3s and you can listen in the car, the iPlayer, or anywhere you like. You'll find me on Twitter at Tony Gosling. Here's wishing you a relaxing and enjoyable long May Day weekend on BCFM with Billy Quain's Saturday Edition Arts Show tomorrow morning, 10 till 12. And the real
presented
music.
Presented by Steve
Satan tomorrow, we hear. And the real musical deal. Sunday evening at 7 with Danny Lopsch. I'll leave you with music from 1972, Chrissy Hynde and Mood Swings. Do please join me at the same time next week. God bless and don't let the banksters get you down.